Welcome back, everyone. We are Honest Iceland, your Icelandic friends.
From Iceland.
And from Germany.
Every week we share with you great stories.
Little known mysteries.
And how to explore the island like a pro.
Get to know its inhabitants, their everyday life, and find out what makes Iceland so unique.
Honestly, I think this episode is going to be pretty fascinating.
Exactly, because we are going to talk about Icelandic volcanoes. And is the next eruption just around the corner? So when people visit Iceland, they probably don't think much about what is going on underneath their feet. Iceland has one of the most active volcano zones in the world with 32 volcanic systems and an eruption on average every 3 to 4 years. The last eruption happened in, do you remember, Ali?
2014, I think.
Yeah. 2014 to 2015, the Bárðarbunga eruption,
yeah.
Or Holuraun. But I just found out that the new lava field that emerged from this eruption is called Holuraun.
Yeah.
So it's only called since the eruption. It was a new name given to this new lava field.
Yeah, we were rebranding it.
Yeah, you give a lot of new names to things in Iceland. You always name new lava fields and some words that come up new in the English language. You just put it right into Icelandic.
Yeah, I think everything is almost directly named after some event, you know, all of the place. And we will talk a little bit about that in the next episode.
Exactly. So Bárðarbunga is one of Iceland's most powerful volcanoes, and it's located under the country's famous Vatnajökull Glacier. If you remember, we talked about Vatnajökull in our last episode of the top 5 places you should visit. And in autumn 2014, there was an intense seismic activity underneath the glacier. There was fear raising of a volcanic eruption. But when the eruption started, it was outside of the glacier area. And that resulted in a lava field, as we mentioned, called Holuraun. So this eruption was a fissure eruption. It's for people who have no clue what I'm talking about. It's this line that opens up like a kind of like a scar. And you have this fountains of lava spraying out. So it's a pretty nice eruption to take pictures of,
without any
smoke or a lot of smoke or ash coming out.
Yeah, it's so very Instagrammable.
Instagrammable, yeah.
So this very Instagrammable. Nothing in the way, like blurring the vision of the photo. Just like pure hot lava for your feet.
I remember it was just 1 year before I moved to Iceland. So since I live in Iceland, there was no eruption. But I remember the 2015 eruption. People wanted to see this eruption and there were helicopter flights offered to fly over this eruption, of course, for some few $100s.
Yeah.
But I remember some of my friends were really excited and they wanted to fly over this eruption. And I think it's kind of like a tourist magnet.
Yeah.
Back then, Iceland was still super popular, or still is. So now let's go a bit back to understand why Iceland has so much volcanic activity.
We're going to discuss the geological history of Iceland. The formation of Iceland is closely connected to the movement of Earth's tectonic plates. Iceland lies in the junction between the North American and the Eurasian plate. And the point where the massive plates split is called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. This plate boundary is located on the ocean floor and part of the longest mountain range in the world.
As mentioned before, this Atlantic Ridge runs through the country. We talked about it a few times in the podcast. It can be seen in the Reykjanes area, where there is the bridge between the continents, and also in Þingvellir, our national park. And the plates move slowly apart. equivalent to about 2 centimeters a year, which is 0.4 inches.
The country is literally tearing apart.
Very slowly, but yeah. It is.
Yeah, in like geological terms. Not good. So around 60 million years ago, extensive volcanic activity began in this region, starting to separate Greenland and Northern Europe. Because, you know, they were neighbors at this time. So how do we know all this kind of stuff? 60 million years ago? That sounds like a long time. When the continents move apart, as it happens with Greenland and North Europe, hot rock flows from the mantle up to the lower crust and cools down, forming ocean crust, which is thinner than the crust that forms continents. And the oldest crust in the North Atlantic is about 54 to 56 million years old. Isn't it cool that we can date this back?
It's super cool.
Yeah, I think so.
So the separation must have begun a few million years earlier. And that's how we know that Iceland's formation must have begun around 60 million years ago, because these rocks that they found are about 54 to 56 million years old. And Iceland has so much volcanic activity compared to other parts of the world. And that's why most geoscientists believe that a powerful mantle plume is located underneath Iceland. So you can imagine this mantle plume as a large column of hot rocks which rise hundreds of kilometers from deep in the earth. Because the rocks in this mantle plume are hotter than their surrounding rocks, they can melt faster and create lava that is closer to the surface. So basically, you know, you have this rocks that are hotter underneath Iceland than in other parts of the world. And that's why the lava is much closer to the crust which we are standing on and living. And that creates this hotspots. Hotspots. That's what the geoscientists believe. But I don't think they have like an actual proof because you cannot dig so deep into the earth. And other places where you have a similar phenomenon is Hawaii or the Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah, I want to go there.
Yeah, I want to go there too.
I want to go to Yellowstone.
So research shows that right now the mantle plume is almost directly below Barda Bunga, where the last eruption took place in 2014. So this is the hotspot. And if you remember, Ali, we've been to the lava center in
Kolsvellir.
And it's super interesting. They have like a model of this mantle plume, how it looks like.
Yeah, underneath the country. Yeah.
And it's super interesting to actually see how it looks, because explaining it, it's hard to imagine. But you can just Google it if you're interested. Yeah. And
and also check out maybe the history of Surtsey while you're there. That's another interesting formation of an island. And also, because we've talked a little bit about the Iceland, you know, driving apart, you can check out the Pangaea, I think. Wasn't this the original country?
Pangaea was the continent with all the countries together.
Yeah. It was like the original country of sorts.
It's
super cool if you just Google Pangaea and like world drifting.
The thing is, I had to hold myself a little bit back in this episode because I'm so excited about this topic and I wanted to talk about the Surtsey eruption, but we could have like 10 episodes just about the geology. But a lot of things that we just told you, this knowledge comes from the Surtsey eruption, because this eruption basically happened in South Iceland. Just to briefly explain it to you, it's an island that formed from a volcanic eruption underneath the ocean. And this island is protected now, so no one can really go to this island, because scientists want to observe how life evolves on an island with no human disturbance.
Disturbance, exactly.
So a lot of things are known because of that. And there are so many interesting facts around this. So basically Iceland was connected through a bridge with the other continents many, many million years ago. And that's, for example, why the Arctic fox, why we have the Arctic fox in Iceland, because it walked over this land bridge that now disappeared underneath the ocean.
Yeah, and just got stuck there.
And got stuck.
And now the forms of transport that animals use to get to Iceland is like icebergs, polar bears and icebergs.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Or shipping containers.
Exactly.
We now have I think we have a cockroach in the zoo.
Really? My God.
It's under exotic animals.
Wow.
Let's go over that in another episode, wildlife.
But like I said, this is just a very short explanation of why Iceland has such a volcanic zone. But if you want to dig deeper into this topic, there is a very good book about Iceland's geology that I will link in the episode notes that I also refer to. And just read about it. Read about Surtsey, about the eruptions, about what happened many million years ago, if you want to. But now let's go to what everyone is waiting for. We talk about the devastating eruptions that happened in the last couple of many thousand years.
Mm-hmm.
Last couple of many thousand years.
Yeah, in the past few thousand years.
And
so
one,
it's recent. We're talking recent.
We're talking recent in geological time.
Yeah, very recent.
One eruption that is always in Icelanders' minds, I think, that they will never be forgotten, is the Laki eruption or Lakagiga eruption. Ali, I think you must have learned about this in school because it was so devastating.
Yeah, I think so.
So the Laki eruption happened in 1783 and lasted for 8 months. It is part of the biggest single lava flow on the planet, creating a 20 kilometer wide lava field. And you can actually drive through this lava field if you have a Jeep. There's a road and it just stretches so far that you cannot imagine what happened there a few thousand years ago.
Yeah.
So Lakagiga, or the Laki craters, is a 27 kilometer long eruptive fissure consisting of 130 giant craters on the southwest side of Vatnajökull. And the eruption, like I said, lasted 8 months from June 1783 till February 1784. It was nothing short of a catastrophe. 50 to 80% of livestock and 25% of the Icelandic population died. And that was because of the haze, and it caused the worst environmental socioeconomic disaster in Iceland's history. The effects of the eruption reached far, and the sulfuric aerosol cloud produced by the Laki eruption generated haze that hovered over large parts of the northern hemisphere during the summer of 1783. So it was really dense all over Europe, blocking the sunlight. And by the beginning of July, it had spread to Russia, Siberia, and China. Just imagine this. At its peak, it covered about a quarter of the Earth's surface, or all land north of the 30% latitude line.
It actually has been argued that the French Revolution began with the eruption in Laki because of the enormous influence the mist had on the climate and farming in Europe. So maybe not the main reason why it started, mm-hmm. but maybe mm-hmm. it had an effect. I think Icelanders just like to implement themselves in history all over.
Yeah, exactly. I was hoping you say this.
Yeah, I think so. It's like, yes, it's because of the volcano that went out in Iceland. This is why the French decided that they deserved better.
Yeah, and I mean, it might have had an influence because of the mist blocking the sunlight, the crops were dying, the animals were dying, not just in Iceland, in all Europe. You cannot really trace it back. No one really said, okay, volcano eruption, we're gonna have a revolution. Now, of course, you cannot really trace this back, but like Ali said, Icelandic people will always always argued towards that they had an influence on something that happened on the planet.
Of course. Obviously. We are very, very important. You just don't know it yet.
Basically, what happened with this eruption, why this eruption was so devastating, is because people in Iceland died of hunger. And during the hardship, 1 in 5 Icelanders died. So about 10,000 people died. And in some parts, 40% of the population died, 20 farms were covered with lava, and another 30 were badly damaged and had to be temporarily abandoned. And it sounds not much like, oh, okay, 30 farms were damaged. But I mean, this is what people did back then. They needed the cattle and their livestock to survive.
Yeah. And this is in the like 1700s.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we did not get out of our like farm, like
about like 100
grass,
years ago,
maybe. Yeah, grass houses until the like Second World War when the Americans came and built the roads.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, this is huge. This is a huge blow.
But there is one story that is told over and over again that brings a little bit of light in this eruption, and I think it is also told in schools today, and it is the story of Pastor Jón Steingrímsson. He is the pastor that lived in a village. He describes the eruption as follows. My companions and I walked towards the fissure. There, a flood of fire flowed with the speed of a great river swollen from meltwater on a spring day. In the middle of this fiery river, great cliffs and slabs of rock were swept along, tumbling about like a large whale swimming, red hot and glowing. And this pastor spoke to the people of this village, telling them to not be afraid and to be positive and keep on having faith. And he is now famous for the fire mass, because while he did the fire mass in the church, the lava stopped 2 kilometers before the village. And it is now believed, also it is a miracle that his writings, his notes were still found. And he told people, carry on believing in life. Some people believe that he had a direct connection to God and that he stopped the lava. And this church that we talked about is in Kirkjubæjarklaustur, and it can still be visited. I think it's quite a popular tourist spot because of this story. And we haven't, at least I haven't been there yet. But I know about the story, and I will visit this church in the future.
Yeah, it's very Instagrammable as well.
Everything in Iceland is Instagrammable.
Very Instagrammable. So brush up your Instagram account before heading here.
So the Lakagíga eruption, something to remember, something to look up, because if you want to see these 130 craters, there are good drone pictures of this area. And I think you can hike in this area. It's definitely worth it. One more fact that I just remembered that I saw in a documentary that I can link for you as well, if you're crazy about volcanoes.
Yeah.
Of course, no one has any photo or video material of this eruption. It's only written in books. People documenting this eruption. But it is said that there were lava fountains 500 meters high. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Can you imagine? And no one took a photo of it.
No one took a photo.
No photos. Thankfully, that will not happen today. Everyone will take photos.
It's just, this eruption is just so crazy. It must have looked like the apocalypse, like an inferno of fire, so big and going on for 8 months. It's just unimaginable what happened there, especially if you go in this region and see the lava field. And of course, with the thought in the back of everyone's mind, probably of, okay, this could happen again, this big eruption.
Yeah, of course, of course.
So I guess we move on to the next one, Hekla.
Yeah. So Hekla is really, it's a really powerful volcano. So Hekla is Iceland's most active volcano. It has erupted about 20 times in the last 1,140 years. The eruption between 1947 and 1948 is likely both the second greatest lava eruption of Hekla, whilst Iceland has been inhabited, and the second greatest lava eruption in the world in the period between 1900 to the 1970s. It was the first volcanic eruption in Iceland to be photographed and filmed. There we go. The inclusion of Instagram. Well, not really.
But it's definitely famous for that it was the first time that someone took a photo of an eruption.
Yeah. Hekla's eruption in 1947 created a volcanic plume that rose about 30 kilometers into the stratosphere.
Hekla eruptions often result in multiple hazards, including tephra emission. That's the stuff that, you know, falls down from the sky covering everything. Lava flows, pyroclastic flows, which is the pyroclastic is the thing that's just so toxic, it just kills you. I think this is what happened in Pompeii. I don't want to put some wrong information out there, but I think pyroclastic is the worst thing that can happen because it kills in seconds. And flooding due to the snow melt. This is a common problem of Icelandic volcanoes because a lot of the most active volcanoes lie underneath Vatnajökull Glacier. So when they erupt, all the snow, kilometer thick
of,
coverage of snow and ice melts and causes floods. Jökulhlaup.
Yeah. But it sounds so ridiculous to you know, to have a flood. And it's like, what was the reason for the flood? Well, a volcanic eruption. You know, it doesn't sound like it should belong together, but it does.
So in a very large eruption in the year 1104, Hekla earned the title Gateway to Hell. There are several books and documents that point out that people saw large and small birds flying in the mountain's fire, which were taken to be souls of dead people. In the 16th century, Caspar Poyser wrote that the gates of hell could be found in the bottomless abyss of Hekla Fell. So a lot of people believe that Hekla was the gate to hell. And this belief persisted until the 19th century. Another source says that old tales tell of the belief that souls of the condemned traveled through Hekla's crater on their way to hell. Others say that the witches met with the devil on its top. And the name Hekla derived from an old Norse word meaning cloak, and it refers to the mist that is always around the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hekla, gateway to hell, definitely a common belief in the past century. I also heard once the story that people heard screams from the mountain, from the damned souls. So there are a lot of mythical stories about Hekla, and if you travel around Hekla, maybe you hear some souls screaming. Let us know. So there's another, we can call it devastating eruption, but it got a happy ending, I would say.
The only thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to that one is they sometimes talk about Hekla being the gateway to hell, but also in the movie and the book Journey to the Center of the Earth, they talked about Snæfellsjökull.
Yeah.
And in an inactive volcano in Snæfellsjökull, that was the entrance to the center of the earth.
Yeah. In Jules Verne's book, they say underneath of Snæfellsjökull is the entrance point to the center of the earth. So
we have the gateway to hell and the entrance to the center of the earth. So do you need any more reasons to come visit?
To visit Iceland.
So now we're going to talk about the Heimaey eruption in Eldfell. So we talked about the eruption in Vestmannaeyjar briefly in our last episode. If you remember, where you can hike on top of the volcano to feel the hot stones.
And cook pizza.
And cook pizza. You don't only have to cook pizza, you can cook something else if you like. But pizza, stone-baked from volcanic stones.
Mm-hmm. Once in a lifetime experience.
Once in a lifetime experience. But don't save on the pizza like the last people that we saw. I think they had like Euro Shopper pizzas. Don't do that. So if you're going to go big, go big. Within 6 hours after the eruption, nearly all of Heimaey's 5,300 residents had been evacuated safely to the mainland, which is Iceland, of course. Heimaey is, of course, in Vestmannaeyjar, a small island on the south coast of Iceland. The people were incredibly lucky that all the fishing boats were at the harbor at this time because of a stormy day before, so they didn't go out to sea. In this volcanic eruption, there were numerous homes that were completely buried by tephra, set afire by glowing lava bombs, or overwritten by advancing fronts of lava flows.
And you can still see some of these houses, which we said in the last episode, that are just completely damaged. And yeah. I mean, you have to look up the pictures from this eruption. You can see that the tephra covered the houses in Heimaey until the roofs. You could only see a chimney.
Yeah.
So much tephra fell from this eruption, and also these lava bombs. They were just bombs coming out from this eruption flying. And I think they got pretty lucky that they evacuated so many people
so quickly
the middle of the night.
Yeah. And of course, there is a museum in Vestmannaeyjar about this called Eldheimar, or like Fire World. And it tells you the story of life, you know, a little bit before, during the eruption, and then after, of course. Now, at the time of the eruption, the harbor of Heimaey was very important because the island's main income was fishing.
Yeah, if you have been there, or if you see pictures, the harbor is really narrow area. You have to go by boat through this like narrow...
It has like an entrance door.
Yeah, yeah. And the lava flowed towards this point, so it would have closed the complete harbor.
Yeah. So what did they do? They started a cooling operation, and this has never been done before. They used pipes to pump seawater onto the lava flow. From February 6, 1973, until the lava cooling operation ended on July 10th, 1973. Approximately 8 million cubic yards of seawater were pumped onto the lava flow, converting about 5 million cubic yards of molten lava into solid rock.
Isn't it cool that we just use yards? So we don't understand what yards is.
No,
we're metric people, but all the Americans.
I got no clue what a cubic yard, cubic yard. What is that?
Okay, bear with us. You just convert this for us. Thank you.
Yes, please do. Just send this to us.
So this eruption was so crazy because there were no warnings.
No.
As we mentioned before.
Yeah, they completely missed it.
Somehow they misjudged the measurements, and the people were completely surprised by this in the middle of the night.
But it can happen. You can misread things.
But I mean, by now, people, of course, returned to Heimaey, to Vestmannaeyjar, and some people never returned. They just stayed on the mainland in Reykjavik or surrounding areas. And by now, the population is...
I think it's still less than it was.
So when I Google it, the population now is about 4,500, and it was definitely more...
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, you can check it in the museum, Eldheimar. They have a detailed information about this.
I loved this museum.
Yeah, it's super nice.
Really. We're not affiliated with them. I just tell you, this is a very, very cool museum. And like I said, I know no one really can plan a trip right now in 2020, but there will be a point where life returns to normal and where you can travel again.
Yeah.
And then you just know.
2021.
Yeah.
2021.
Hopefully. And then definitely put Vestmannaeyjar, Heimaey on your bucket list? Let's move on to the tongue breaker. Do you even say that? We say that in German language. Zungenbrecher. The tongue breaker of the volcanic eruption that put Iceland on the map in 2010. And it's the Eyjafjallajökull eruption. I think I can say it perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, it is perfect. Eyjafjallajökull. It's perfect.
So
practice at home. Everyone listening at home, practice. Eyjafjallajökull.
You just have to put the word into three parts. Eyja.
Yeah, island.
Fjalla.
Mountains.
Jökull.
Glaciers.
So the double L in this word, you just pronounce as if you would read a word with a DL. And then you say Eyjafjallajökull.
Yeah, the most common start to this is usually Eyjafjallajökull. Eyjafjallajökull.
Yeah, I love when Americans try this. Eyjafjallajökull.
Yeah, Eyjafjallajökull.
Or yeah. E15. Didn't
yeah, E15. It, yeah, was the, E15. It was the American military, I think, that came up with this.
Because it has 15.
Yeah, it's like E is the first letter and then mm-hmm. 15 is the rest. So it was just referred to as E15. So
you Americans are so inventive.
It's pretty good. I'm going to call everything like this. And no, this is not my laptop. This is my L6.
So.
But they're only. No, this is one, two. L5. It's L5. They're just. There are six letters in laptop, and L is the first one.
Da-da-da-dum.
The L5.
So what is really interesting now in 2020 about this eruption is that we thought it was bad when millions of passengers were stranded in 2010 after Eyjafjallajökull spewed an ash cloud in the upper atmosphere and cancelled thousands of flights. Well, how foolish were we? Because I'm pretty sure COVID-19 cancelled way more flights than Eyjafjallajökull.
Yeah.
But it was pretty bad at this time.
I definitely feel for everyone working in like airports or working with airlines. I've met so many people that were working in airlines in 2010 in like the call center or in the office or something, and it's like I really feel for you for that at that time. I think you must be over it by now. It's 10 years ago.
But yeah, still. It's a 10-year anniversary, actually.
Yeah, it's 10-year anniversary this year, but I don't remember when it was exactly.
I think in April.
Yeah, so we missed the anniversary.
But yeah, at this time in 2010, the shutdown of the airports all over Europe was pretty bad. Actually, it was the largest air traffic shutdown since World War II. I think about 10,000 passengers were stranded during this time. So if you were, it's very likely that one of our listeners is one of them. And I really enjoyed talking to tourists and asking them about it, because almost everyone told me a story of, oh, my friend or my sister couldn't go to a wedding or this and this happened. So everyone has a story. And that's why I think it's so actually nice that Eyjafjallajökull is now in a lot of stories, even though people haven't been in Iceland to see it, but it affected their life back then in 2010. And Eyjafjallajökull's eruption history is well known. Since the settlement, the volcano erupted 4 times. Doesn't sound like a lot. While the eruption itself can be small, all of the eruptions are accompanied by a glacier flood, Jökulhlaup.
The word Jökulhlaup actually has been adapted into other languages, describing a large and abrupt release of water from subglacial lakes or reservoirs. And I don't think there's any translation for this word.
It's just glacier flood.
Yeah, but Jökulhlaup is the...
But kind of Iceland created this word because of the outbursts from Vatnajökull. So Vatnajökull has the outbursts of water where a lot of glacial flood from these subglacial lakes streams out underneath the glacier. And because this happened so often in Iceland, they created this word and it was adapted in other languages. Eyjafjallajökull is covered by an ice cap of around 200 meters thickness. So when an eruption occurs, the ice melts, causing glacier flood. And this happened in 2010. However, the damage of this flood was relatively small. People had more concerns about the ash. And I know that in general media, it is never reported that it had a lot of an effect on the people, because of course the area around Eyjafjallajökull is not inhabited. But if you watch a documentary, if you talk to the people that have farms around this volcano, you will see that it had an effect on the people. A lot of people had to be evacuated. It was darkness. You can see in the videos, it was just dark in the middle of the day. The ash cloud darkened everything. And not all animals could be saved.
No.
Or it wasn't possible to save all animals. And we saw footage of this eruption, Ali, if you remember, and a lot of sheep had these like eyes were glued together because of the ash and was really horrible. So a lot of sheep died that couldn't be saved because, you know, in Iceland, the sheep are everywhere during the summer.
Yep.
They're just on the mountains and in the fields, and they're just having this sheep roundup in the end of October, where they come back inside. So that was really bad, and also horses died. And I mean, this had a bad financial effect on the farmers. So it definitely had an effect. The ash was really sticky, and then, you know, it rained on it. It was a lot of mud, and when this mud dried, it was just concrete. So seeing the pictures, of course, it's like in the international media, if no one dies, there's not so much attention. But yeah, the farmers were affected by this. And I don't know, Ali, do you remember this eruption?
No.
You don't?
the Eyjafjallajökull one. Yeah, of course. I mean, of course I remember it. But it wasn't that... You know, you didn't really, it wasn't that catastrophic in the city itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, we got masks, which is the custom now, 10 years later again.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? It's like 10-year mask anniversary as well.
Yeah.
But we like in the city, we didn't have to use it. The volcanic eruption wasn't really, it didn't really get into Reykjavik. It was blown into the other direction.
But I saw pictures from Petland's observation deck. There was like an ash cloud. You could see it in the distance.
Yeah. But it actually didn't get that bad that you were like, you know, breathing in ash, you know.
I think a lot of people had also health effects from that, especially the farmers that were breathing in the ash.
This was similar to COVID. This is bad for your lungs,
breathing
in the ash. And the thing was the ash was so like fine, it was so thin, so it just went in between everything. It went in between the, you know, the hood of cars and just filled up the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it went through if you had the slightest isolation crack or something on your windows, it just went through. So of course this was horrible for the people living close by.
But I even heard stories about Hafnarfjörður that they had ash in their apartments just because it creep through every single crack.
Every single crack. And I'm pretty sure it would just go through your door, you know, your front door.
Mm-hmm.
It was so
isolation.
Fine.
Isolation is not really the strength in Icelandic apartments, according to my experience. So now we told you everything about all the past eruptions. And of course, we got a lot more.
Yeah, we had a lot more eruptions. Of course, we did not cover all of the eruptions.
But these were the most, I'd say, devastating or most known ones.
Yeah, and also the most relevant ones. I mean, we just went back to the 1700s, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
so they're still relevant.
There are a lot more volcanoes and eruptions. But now the question is, which volcano will erupt next? And good thing is, because of all these past eruptions, the scientists and volcanologists learned from this pattern of the volcanoes and so can much better predict now what will happen next.
Yeah.
And very recent on the radar again is Grímsvötn.
So the last eruption occurred in 2011, just as Bárðarbunga. The Grímsvötn Center is a part of a fissure system, which includes the Laki fissure, which we talked about in the devastating eruption of the 1700s. So, see, still relevant.
Yeah, it has the same. It's connected to the same system.
Yeah.
So the Icelandic Met Office raised the aviation color code for Grímsvötn to yellow on the 30th of September, which is just about 1 week ago. Because as we record now, we pre-record this episode on the 10th of
October.
Yeah. So maybe by the time you hear this episode, the eruption already takes place. We don't know.
Yeah. Or so, maybe after you heard the episode, the eruption will take place.
So there is this color, coding system. I don't want to go too deep into this. Normally all the active volcanoes are on green, which means they are active, but there is no immediate danger coming from them. So no immediate eruption. And if the color is set to yellow, that means this volcano has to be monitored more closely now because it shows signs of eruption. And this is what happened with Grímsvötn now on the 30th of September. Because the activity has been increasing over time and was above background levels. The report stated that seismic activity has increased over the past month. The cauldron had deepened in several places around the caldera. So, what happens now is that they keep on measuring and they're gonna look at the patterns of past eruption. And it is expected that an intense swarm of earthquakes will happen that will last about a few hours. And this will be a signal that magma is moving towards the surface and an eruption is immediate. So this is what you're looking for now. Luckily, there are no villages around Grímsvötn because it's uninhabited area. However, a possible glacier flood can affect the south coast of Iceland, where most people travel, not in COVID times, but normally, and also villages are there. Yeah, so it can affect the south coast if a glacier flood would happen. So let's just say Grímsvötn is the most possible next eruption just because it shows signs of activity.
Yeah, I'm still not gonna go for that as the possible next eruption. I think there will be another.
What do you think?
Volcano. I think that Grímsvötn might be the third, and I think the second one might be Katla. Now, Katla is overdue, although volcanoes cannot technically be overdue, because their patterns are always changing and the activity is very complex. But scientists are talking about Katla in several years. Because the eruption is overdue, according to the past pattern, because Katla has erupted pretty consistently around every 100 years. And the last eruption was in the 1918, which is 102 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, Katla erupts once or twice every century.
Yeah, and the last eruption, 1918, was three times bigger than the Eyjafjallajökull, or E15. Since the settlement, it appears that Katla has erupted in similar times as Eyjafjallajökull, but it's unknown if it's like a more of a coincidence. However, in 2011, just 1 year after Eyjafjallajökull eruption, a small glacier flood was released. It ruptured the ring road and washed away Múlakvísl Bridge.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Because
no.
I, I just think that
I remember hearing about it, but I mean, like, to remember it in 2011, hearing it happen, not really.
So it is possible that this was an eruption already. Scientists, my research showed that scientists really argue about this. They're not sure. This could have been an eruption that was not as big, and it just happened basically not visible for us. And that's why this glacier flood was released. And that was in 2011.
Yeah. So after the Eyjafjallajökull eruption. But yeah. I'm pretty unconvinced that this was a Katla eruption.
Yeah, if you
Katla
talk to...
eruptions
yeah,
are if, really powerful.
Yeah, if you talk to older Icelanders, they usually used to tell me that no, Katla is dangerous and Katla will erupt and it will be devastating, will be big, it will be powerful. They don't believe that this was already the eruption just because there was a Jökulhlaup, a glacier flood released.
I don't think it was, because like Katla is, I think, Iceland's super volcano, you know, so it's really powerful. And this is what Icelanders fear is a huge eruption, like the one in the 1755, one of the most powerful and largest volcanic eruptions in Icelandic history, about 50 times as strong as the Eyjafjallajökull eruption.
Yeah.
Also, the glacier flood following an eruption of Katla could destroy the village of Vík, giving the people there about a 30-minute warning.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Vík is a really popular tourism town.
Yeah. I mean, they had a drill with the people. You could read this in the news where they tested how quick they can be evacuated, but 30 minutes is very, very short.
Yeah.
And they know it. The people in Vík just know it. It can happen anytime. They get a 30-minute warning, and then this glacier flood could just destroy the whole village, leading into the ocean to destroy Reynisfjara, the beach.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, I think it's not really in the back of everyone's mind that lives here. It's like with COVID. When it happens, you just start to panic, but you don't really think about it as, you know, isn't there a super volcano underneath
Yellowstone?
No, Yellowstone and the LA or something.
I don't know.
Movie with Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson.
Didn't really watch that.
So there are some super volcanoes, and I don't think the people in the U.S. are constantly thinking about it, although the earthquakes are much more devastating in the U.S. because the...
Yeah, but I mean, like... Yeah, but it's crazy. I think if I remember correctly, the Yellowstone is really, really powerful.
Yeah. Didn't you see this in the movie 2020?
No, 2010?
2010?
Wasn't it called 2020?
The movie with John Cusack.
I think so. Wasn't it called? No, it was 2012.
Yeah, 2012.
Yeah, 2012.
It's like an old beard already.
Yeah, a very old movie, which was listed as a comedy after 2012, I think.
Okay.
I saw that somewhere. But they have changed it again. I'm on IMDb now. Action, adventure, sci-fi.
Ooh. I just like John Cusack. But hey, let's move on to the next volcano that will probably erupt soon. And you guessed it. It's Bárðarbunga, where supposedly the mantle plume center is just beneath.
Yeah. Bunga.
Bunga. So last eruption, 2014... We mentioned that the system has erupted on average every 50 years, and the large eruptions, so not like the small one in 2014, the large eruptions happen every 250 to 600 years, so we could be lucky. And in 1477, the Bárðarbunga system produced the largest known volcanic eruption in Iceland after the settlement, and one of the most powerful eruptions in the past 10,000 years in Iceland. The caldera is the center of a larger volcanic system, the largest in Iceland and one of the largest in the world. And it has actually produced more lava in the past 10,000 years than any other volcano on Earth. So Bárðarbunga is probably the active volcano that erupts every other year. So most likely, Ali believes Katla will be next. I think Grímsvötn will be next.
No, I don't think Katla will be next. I think Katla is the second choice to be next.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Öræfajökull.
Öræfajökull.
I think that's going to be the next one.
Is the volcano that, or yeah, covered by a glacier that you can see just behind Jökulsárlón, the glacier lagoon. And 3 years ago, 17th of November 2017, the aviation color code was set to yellow. We just explained that. Because measurements showed an increase of volcanic activity with magma building up and a cauldron forming on top of the mountain. I don't know if you remember this, Ali, but you could actually see this from, I was flying over it from Keflavik along the south coast, and you could see this cauldron forming. So it was melting deep into the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought back then, okay, this will now be the eruption. But nothing happened.
But nothing happened.
However, authorities believe that there will also only be a 20-minute warning before the effects of an eruption are felt along the coast. Yeah. So as well, Öræfajökull, Eyjafjallajökull, and Katla are all these volcanoes that are underneath Vatnajökull Glacier along the south coast. So all these volcanoes could possibly have a very devastating effect on the south coast and on the bridges.
Yeah.
We are so used to travel there and going over all these bridges, and it's just something we take for granted, but it could all be destroyed in an eruption.
Yeah.
And there is one more volcano.
One more that we've already talked about.
Yep.
And that is Hekla. Since instrumental monitoring of Hekla began in the 70s, eruptive signals have been detected only tens of minutes before an eruption started. In an article of the Icelandic Monitor in July this year, it states that measurements near stratovolcano Hekla indicate a build of magma pressure, and it has been become considerably greater than when the volcano last erupted in 1991 and 2000. The Institute of Earth Science at the University of Iceland, which performed the measurements, warns that eruptions in Hekla usually happen suddenly, and that hikers in the vicinity of the volcano might be in danger of volcanic activity.
Yeah, so if basically what they say is it's very unlikely to survive when hiking around Hekla.
Yeah.
And do you remember, Ali, when we were closest to Hekla, there was a summer house we stayed.
Yeah.
Just in front of Hekla.
Yeah, but we were still pretty far away.
Yeah, you think that. But
yeah.
An eruption happens and...
Yeah, but if you are hiking on Hekla, make sure you got your Instagram open. Because if there is a volcanic eruption, I mean... volcanic eruption selfie just before
you die
is pretty epic, I would say. So
you guys, it's so funny when Ali talks about Instagram, because he never posted a single picture on Instagram. He has an account and he never posted anything.
I do not use it, but I encourage you to.
So Hekla also, that just reminds me, there is an ice cave just under Katla volcano,
yeah,
or in Katla volcano,
yeah,
and
Katla.
They offer tours there. I think you'll just die there as well if Katla erupts and you're just there ice caving.
Yeah, but I mean, like, every time if you're on a volcano and erupts, odds are you're maybe gonna die.
So it is not possible to guarantee that people visiting the area could be warned in time to seek shelter before an eruption of Hekla would start.
Don't let this scare you. Just come visit Iceland, hike on the volcanoes. You know, odds of them going off and exploding are super low, and you'll just see beautiful scenery. And worst case scenario, you'll get the perfect Instagram picture.
And one last thing that should be noted for everyone when we talk about volcanoes is that we don't say if,
we say when.
Thank you everyone for listening. Next week we have a very special surprise for you, so I definitely recommend you to tune in into next week's episode. And in the meantime, we have our website ready steady with all the information you need for planning your Iceland trip.
Yeah.
And if you like our podcast and if you want us to talk about something that you always wanted to hear about, then there is a survey on our website. Just takes you 2 minutes to fill out, and that helps us to plan future episodes for you.
Yeah.
So we would be super grateful. Otherwise, just send an email to podcast@honesticeland.com.
Yeah.
And talk to us.
Yeah. And what is the website?
Honesticeland.com.
Yeah. Go to it, honesticeland.com. Read all the articles, listen to podcasts, and just enjoy.
Thank you guys for listening over and over again. We love you all and wish you a beautiful day.